So last week we talked to the men. I just want to do a quick recap. What we talked about was this, that men are made to be responsible gardeners, that God made men in such a way to take care and to tend the world and to look at the world around them and to go take what's good and make it better, that God made you to be a man to make things better. And what a man stops asking the question, what can I expect from life? But what does life expect from me? What does life need from me? Men, secondly, we said this, are made to be sacrificial leaders. That I said this to you. I said, if you are a man in the room, make it your goal. Make it your goal to become a man who is safe, who women feel safe with. Make it your goal to become a man women feel safe with. And here's why I'll say this, okay? Not just protection, like, dude, I got guns and we're going to take out whoever. It's like, no, become a man who makes women feel safe emotionally. Because when you look at Jesus and the life of Jesus, it amazes me at how good he was at making women feel safe. I used the woman at the well last week, but I think about the woman who was caught in the act of adultery. She's dragged in front of Jesus, naked, ashamed, in the middle of the scene. And as she's pulled in there, Jesus, she doesn't even question for a moment his motives. He's like, woman, leave your life of sin. I don't condemn you, and neither do they. And I'm not going to use you, and they're done using you too. It's like Jesus just had this value for women, that men are called to be these sacrificial leaders, these safe places, that the boy goes down, the girl goes free. And then last thing we said is men are made to be spiritual guardians, that every gift God has given you as a man, you are tasked with the job of guarding it. That's your body, that's your mind, that's your heart, that's your eyes, that's your ears. We're going to talk about it more tonight. Immature men, we said, don't act like women. They act like little boys. We said the Peter Pan syndrome that a lot of men are struggling with. We don't want to grow up because it feels easier to escape and avoid all of our commitments and be a forever boy. But 1 Corinthians says this, when I was a child, I talked like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. But when I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. We just challenged last week. It's like, it's time to put the ways of childhood behind us. Immature men don't act like women. They act like little boys. I was thinking about this. There's a lie in your 20s, and I've kind of been telling you throughout this entire series that I just believe there's lies in your 20s that you're fed all the time. But I was thinking about it like this in the sense of a timeline. There's two lies I think are predominant in your 17, 18 years old to your late 20s, early 30s, that you have this lie in our world that says there's no time in the world, right? So what that means is this, we got to rush through life. So I got to figure out how I'm going to figure out my career. I got to figure out graduating college. I got to figure out what am I going to do with my life on top of all that. I'm going to figure out who I got to marry. And I got to figure it out in a matter of 3 months, right? So I got no time because everybody else is ahead of me and I got to rush through this, right? It's a lie. Like nobody said you got to get all of that figured out by next week, right? But it's this pressure that we feel. The other thing that I think, the second lie is simply this. It goes no time in the world or all the time in the world. That my 20s and my 30s, it's like my 20s are just for me to live it up. I got all the time in the world. I don't need to figure this stuff out. I don't need to ask any questions. I'll just kind of live how I want to live, kind of disconnect from everything going on around me, right? And here's what I would tell you, that the truth is the hour is urgent, but you don't have to rush it. That the hour's urgent, right? You have screens, you have social media, you have gender talk, sexuality, mental health, addiction, AI, political landscape, changing job market, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to all worry about, right? The hour's urgent for you to grow up. It's for you to grow up. It's not for you to figure out life. It's for you to grow up. That you don't have all the time in the world to figure to grow up. You have lots of time to figure life out. You don't have time to mess around. And if you are a guy and you're chasing after marriage, my fear is that if you're chasing after marriage, you won't chase after manhood. And so when you get married, you won't be ready for it. That's my fear. Does that make sense? Gals, I worry about the same thing, that if you're focused so much on marriage or my job or whatever it is, that you won't pursue God's vision for what it is to be a woman, and you'll find yourself setting yourself up to fail. We said this, gender is rooted in creation, redeemed at the cross. God has had a plan and a purpose for gender at the beginning of creation. Sin has distorted it and twisted it, but Jesus shows us this gift and beauty of gender and what it's meant to be again and again. And here's the problem. Many of us, when we think about what it means to be a man, we don't look to God. We look to the world, right? I saw this study, social media study. 4 out of 10 women say they view womanhood through the lens of social media. 4 out of 10. The study for guys was 1 out of 20. So it's a little bit more prevalent for women. But 1 out of 20, I think what men do is they look to different pictures, not necessarily social media. Tonight, really what I want to talk to you about is what's the measure for a man? Like, how do we measure what a man is? And I think a lot of times we'll look to podcasts, we'll look to gurus, we'll look to professors or some guy who wrote a book. And I think of prominent guys, you could probably think of more guys than this, but Jordan Peterson, Andrew Tate, Joe Rogan, like, what do they have to say about what it means to be a man? And if I could just tell you, be careful, right? That they can be false pictures of masculinity, and an alpha male stereotype isn't necessarily what it means to be a man. The measurements of our world describe men are usually around the quantity of accomplishments a man has, achievements they do, stuff they accumulate. So if I just have lots of toys, if I have lots of money, if I've achieved a lot of stuff in my life, then that must make me a man. And I will tell you, God doesn't look at what the world looks at. God looks at not the quantity of stuff a man can do, but he looks at the quality of a man's heart and the quality of a man's life. That the men we think are often impressive in our world today, God looks at them, and I don't think he thinks they're all that impressive. The world says to be a man, you need to make much of yourself. God says, I look up for men who make much of me. And girls, if I could say, as we jump in, okay, I know we're setting up, but as we jump in, I want you to stay dialed in because I want you to look for men. And men that you can have as brothers, and men that maybe one day God would have a picture for you, because I don't want you to have a fake idea of what a man looks like. If he's got muscles, or if he looks good on Instagram, or he's got a pretty face or a big bank account, that's not a man, right? Like, that's not a picture of a man. I want to give you some expectations for a man. Guys, I want you to dial in, because I said this, I do not want to beat you up, but I want to build you up. I don't want to push you down. I want to call you higher. You tracking with me? Okay, you still with me? All right, we have one. All right, me and Branson, we'll go, all right? 1 Timothy 4:8 says this, for physical training is of some value, but godliness has value for all things, for all things. My goal tonight is to look and listen to the man of Jesus Christ, the true man, through this story in the Old Testament found of two guys. First guy's name is Saul, second guy's name is David. Saul and David. These were two kings. Saul was a king over God's people at a specific time. And when he was king, Saul is what you would have thought of as the man's man. He was the man's man. He was tall. He was cut. He was handsome. He was charming. He was impressive. He had the look of a leader in his eye. But 1 Samuel says this, the Lord said to Samuel, do not consider his being Saul, his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him, Saul. The Lord does not look on the things that man looks at. Man looks on the outer appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. The Lord looks at the heart. David was a boy. So when Saul was a king and trying to rule the world, looking tall and handsome and all the things, David was out in the fields as this little shepherd boy. He was best friends with lambs, which doesn't get you much fame on Instagram, right? He was throwing rocks for fun. He was killing bears, but he was also playing the lute, and he liked to sing, which is what every guy likes to do, right? That he's out there belting in the fields, beautiful music. He wrote tons of the Psalms. But when God looks for a man, he doesn't look at the appearances on the outside. He looks at the heart of a man. He looks at the heart of a man. God doesn't care about if you're cool. He looks for character. God doesn't look at the image. He looks at integrity. God doesn't look at external things. He looks at the internal heart. He doesn't look for bravado. He looks for bravery. God doesn't care about your appearance. He cares about your internal being, not the outward show. David wasn't looking for competition, and yet Saul felt pretty insecure around David, which is fascinating to me. David was a young man. Saul was much older, and he felt insecure around him. David was secure in God's call, but Saul felt like he needed to compete with David to somehow keep up with David. Saul felt like he needed to prove himself and prove to the world that he was a man, and insecurity drove him, and it drove him not into a godly man. It drove him into a madman. I want you to see the story with me. 1 Samuel 18 says this. Saul was very angry. This refrain displeased him greatly. They have credited David with tens of thousands of people he's killed, and Saul with only thousands. What more can he get but the kingdom? And from that time on, Saul kept a close eye on David. When you're an insecure man, what you'll do is you'll keep a close eye on other men and make sure you're trying to do better than them. The next day, an evil spirit from God came forcefully on Saul. I don't have time to get into all that, but he was prophesying in the house while David was playing the lyre as he usually did, right? Your boy David playing some music. Saul had a spear in his hand and he hurled it, saying to himself, I'll pin David to the wall. But David somehow eluded him twice. Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with David, but had departed from Saul. Saul turned into a madman. Saul was fearing his kingdom was losing. He was fearing that there was a better man coming up, and Saul turns into this madman. Men who turn into madmen, they're insecure when others get recognized. They get jealous when other men's strengths get noticed. They take their eyes off of God, and they start looking to the world, and madmen will throw spears at other men. Mad men will throw spears at other, they'll make fun of other men, they'll tear other men down, they'll use their power and influence to push out other men and keep them out of sight, and so they can be recognized and noticed. They'll compete with other men as needing to prove something, and they'll seek to dominate and destroy as many men that get in their way. Insecure men turn into madmen who don't know who they are. They hurt women, and they hurt children. And madmen, just so you know, they also hurt each other. They hurt other men. They throw spears at people. Mad men fight the wrong battles. Godly men fight the real war. Mad men fight with people. Godly men fight for people. Mad men fight to prove something. Godly men, they fight to protect something greater than themselves. Ephesians says this, for we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. Madmen fight against people. Godly men fight against the evil in this world and the devil himself. What I want you to know is this, godly men know the spiritual war that's going on in the world. Godly men know the spiritual war that's going on in the world. Men love to fight. What are you fighting for, men? What are you fighting for? I think this urge to fight in us actually is a good thing. I don't think it's all bad, but I think a lot of times we get caught up in the wrong fights. We get fighting for our attention. We get fighting to get ahead. We get fighting because we're afraid of falling behind. We get fighting for a house, for some cash, for some hot girl, for a career, for whatever. And we fight. And somehow the war that we think we're in is not a real war. That's the fake one. But there's a real war going on that you are called to fight in. And I think a lot of men have left their posts for it. really do. I think they've kind of checked out that there's a spiritual war zone that you're in, and people are dying, and people are getting abused, and people are abusing themselves, and people are lost in lies, and people are going to hell, and people are living in hell, and people are living without hope, and men are existing as these hollow shells of themselves, and we get caught fighting the wrong war. That there's a spiritual war. It's not against flesh and blood. It's for flesh and blood. Like, it's for people we're called to fight for. The Israelites found themselves enmeshed in this battle against their enemies, the Philistines. And their champion, you might have heard the story growing up, their champion was none other than the 9-foot giant named Goliath, right? Goliath. And so I want you to see just this little story that this guy was huge. He was the best of the best. He had all the best artillery equipment. He was an intimidating figure. And 1 Samuel says this, Then the Philistines said, this day, I defy the armies of Israel. And Goliath is out there saying every single day, give me a man. And let us fight each other. Goliath came shouting, mocking, who's going to be the man to step up and take me? I'm 9 feet tall. I got everything going on. I'm ready to take on whatever man you can bring to my place, right? And instead, all of Israel looked at Goliath and they fell back in fear. Like, all the men are sitting in their tents thinking they would be safe if they just kind of, the problem's just going to go away if I just get back here, right? Like, if I just hide, it'll go away. And I think men do this, that David, he's out there and he leaves his flocks to go deliver a message to the men on the front line. And he gets there, he's got a message, a care package, and he shows up on the front lines of battle as a young man among all of these older men. And he's like, I'm a man among boys. Like, none of these guys are men. They're all shaking in their boots. And David kind of shows up out of nowhere. I think men tend to just show up. Men show up. That's what men do. Men refuse to sit on the sidelines when there's a battle going on. Men refuse to let other people fight their battles for them. Men might be afraid, but they are never going to let fear drive them. Men refuse to sit back or shrink back from what's hard and what's scary because they know what they need to do is right. That's what men do. David shows up and he looks among all these men. He's like, all of them are shrinking back. Which reminds me, last week I said this, the original sin for men was not that they did something wrong, it's that they did nothing at all. And it's the sin you'll have to struggle with. It's the sin I'll have to struggle with as a man. That it's easy to sit back and do nothing at all. And look at what David says. I just imagine David. I don't know how you picture it. I read my Bible, try to bring it to life a little bit. I just think it's like Gladiator. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine? Right? Like that should defy the whole armies of the living God. Like, David is just coming in there as this boy, and he's like, no, I see right through this giant. I see these circumstances, and this is not happening in my house. This is unacceptable that this man is going to stand up and defy God. Are you kidding me? That's not happening here. He's on the battlefield as a boy, but he finds his voice, and David stands alone and speaks up when everybody else is quiet. David is willing to ask the hard questions when everybody else wants to avoid it and run from it. Like, who's going to fight him? David speaks up. Men, they show up. Men speak up. Men show up. Men speak up. Men speak up when the situation demands for it. Men speak up when things are unacceptable. Men speak up on behalf of others. Men speak up to encourage others. Men speak up to warn others. Men will also speak up and admit when they're wrong. Men will also speak up and ask for help when they're limping. Men will speak words of correction to others. Men will also speak words of kindness. Men will speak words of clarity. men understand that their words have power. Guys, your words as men have power. And so you need to understand your power behind them and the importance of your tone with them. Mad men will throw spears and they will speak down and they will bring down others. But godly men will speak up and they will lift up others. There's something I really think we need to get back to as men. That's one of the fruits of one of the Beatitudes that Jesus talks about is meekness. Do you know what meekness is? It sounds like weakness. It rhymes with it. It's not that. Meekness is strength under control. That's what meekness is. Men need to be meek. Typically, all right, women, I'm coming next week, I promise, okay? We're going to talk, but I'm not trying to dog on you. But if you line up 10 men, 10 average women, most men are physically going to be stronger. Like, they got testosterone running through their bodies and all that. Like, there's going to be one woman who's like just a beast, all right? We all know that, right? But often men are just going to naturally be stronger. Men use their strength to it's under control and it's to lift up and to love others. Mad men use their strength to knock down others. Tracking with me? Still with me? All right. Luke 6:45 says this, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. I was thinking about this, that men speak up. So how are your words? Like, if I were to do an audit on your words as men, would I look at your words and be like, oh my gosh, what's going on in your heart? Because your words tell me what your heart, what's going on there. And so maybe you just need to follow your words this next week and go, man, what's going on inside my heart here? David said to Saul, this scene's going on, Goliath's there. He's getting ready to he's spoken up, he's shown up. And David says to Saul, let no one lose heart. We're going to come back to that in a little bit towards the end. Lose heart. Hold that in your brain. On account of this Philistine, your servant will go and fight him. David goes from the shepherd boy in the fields to a warrior on the front lines. He goes from protecting sheep to protecting men, women, and children. David practices integrity in the quietness of the fields and shows integrity in the spotlight of battlefield. And the kind of man that God looks for in a man is one who will show up, is one who will speak up, and is one who will step up. It's one who will step up. That men are willing to step up in the small things first. Men are willing to step up in the unseen things first, and men are willing to step up and take orders from other men. Did you notice how David said it? He's like, I'm your servant, Saul, even to a madman. David's like, I'm your servant. That men know how to step up and take orders. Can I say this? That men are willing to listen to other men who are in authority of them. Men who don't listen to authority scare me. They scare me. Because if you don't listen to authority, if you don't respect authority here, there's no way you respect the authority of God in your life. It's a man who has no vision or understanding of God. Men that feel incapable. I bet David felt like, you know what? I'm just a boy, but he felt incapable, but he trusted that his God was capable. Men are willing to take initiative and go first and go where no one else wants to go. And men will step up and take responsibility. And they're not always looking for a fight, but they're ready for a fight. And if they need to step up, they're willing to step up. Guys, what's the war that we're in? It's different. It's not against flesh and blood. You're not facing a 9-foot Goliath. You're like, well, if I ever do that, I guess the principle is I'll show up and take on Goliath, right? But in all actuality, what's the war? It's the war in the world for other people. But I think, honestly, most men have forgotten the real war. That Satan is a master of lies. He's known as the father of lies. And there's lies that Satan will craft towards men's heart. There's four of them we're going to look at tonight. That he'll craft towards your heart and craft towards my heart as men. And David became this great warrior after Goliath. Like, he kills Goliath and they're like, all right, David, let's unleash him. And he goes and he becomes this incredible warrior, one of the best Israel's ever seen, God's people has ever seen. But as he goes throughout the years and becomes this incredible warrior, and time goes on, what begins to happen is David forgets the greatest war that he's in. And the greatest war that he is in is it's a war that's fought on the turf of your heart and my heart. That godly men know the war in the heart. Godly men know the war in the heart. Four lies that you need to fight against as a man. And I just want to be, I told you, all right? I hope you know this, guys. I'm like for you. I'm not against you. I'm a man, all right? Like, I get this. And we don't have time to cut. Like, we're going to fly through some of these, okay? But you guys will have time to talk about it in groups, and I hope you do. I hope you spend some time with it. So 2 Samuel, David's grown up. He's an older man. 2 Samuel 11, in the spring, at that time when kings go off to war, David sent Joab out with the king's men and the whole Israelite army. They destroyed the Amorites, the Ammonites, and besieged Reba. But David remained in Jerusalem. So get this. David empties the city. He's the king. He empties the city. And he's sitting alone in Jerusalem. He remains there by himself. It reminds me, maybe the greatest lie that men will ever have to face is this. It's to fight against the lie of loneliness. It's to fight against the lie of loneliness. David's like, go fight the battle, guys, but I'm going to stay back here. And the lie of loneliness, it sounds something like this. I can do this life alone. I don't need anybody's help. You know what? People are inconvenient. Church is like, it's Thursday nights, man. Like, I ain't got time. Like, I got a busy week. That actually, friendships, it seems like to me, are a sign of weakness. That I don't need people. Church is a sign of weakness. Strong men somehow are independent. Lone Rangers and cowboys, those are the cool guys, right? The lie of loneliness says that emotional connection between men is a sign of being soft. And studies are fascinating on this. 1 in 4 young men have a constant feeling of being alone. Constant feeling of being alone. 73% of young men feel like they don't have any close or meaningful friendships. And the deaths of despair, as I referenced it this last week, are over 3 times more likely in young men than women. Deaths of despair, deaths of alcohol, overdoses, or suicide among men. Loneliness is tricky for men. It is. It's a tricky trap because it will trap you there and keep you there for decades, and you think you'll be fine, and it is this silent killer that slowly chokes out your soul as a man because you think, I don't need other people. So what you do as a man is you'll numb or medicate the pain that you're in. You'll go to dark places. When men are alone, they go to dark places, and when men are alone for long enough, they go mad. They go mad. Can I just tell you this? If that's you tonight, if you're a dude, because it feels pretty lame to go, I'm a dude and I'm lonely. Like, that feels lame. I get it. But if that's you tonight, I'm so glad you're here. And I would say, if nothing else, make it a priority to come every single week. If you're like, I don't know anybody, you'll get to know people. We'll get to know you. It'll be a great time. Right? But if you're a man and you feel alone, I want you to know this. You need a band of brothers around you. You don't need buddies who you can go out golfing with or drinking with or whatever it is. You need brothers that you can go to war with. You need brothers who can celebrate the wins in your life and be honest about the struggles that they're faced with. You need brothers who will fight the battle with you, who you need strong relationships, and you need to take it seriously for yourself as a man. 3 things you need for a strong relationship: proximity, so you need to be close to them, you need to be around them often, you need unplanned interactions, you need times where you can just hang out, and you need vulnerability as men. And guys, this one is the one I'm most concerned about, honestly, for men. So if that's you tonight, I just want you to come. If you're like, dude, that one spoke to me, I'd love to chat with you. If you're like, I ain't got any brothers around me. You're like, I need some brothers. I'd love to chat with you. If you're like, I'm not sure where to start, I stand at the door. Come find me afterwards. But 2 Samuel, we're going to go to the second one, okay? One evening, so this is the same story, 2 Samuel 11, he's emptied the city, right? He's emptied the city. He's remained alone. He's by himself. One evening, David got up from his bed, and he walked around on the roof of the palace. Now, I've never seen this before. I was reading this story. I'm like, man, I don't know if I've ever caught this before. But your boy David is out on the roof, and he's just kind of walking around the palace late at night. Why is he up late at night? It got my brain thinking. I don't know. Why is he up late at night? It made me think this. You know what? What often happens is when I'm not tired, I'm up late at night, right? Isn't that true for you, right? Like, it's not crazy. But I think about, what's David been doing? He's been just kind of hanging out in his palace. He's been hanging out in his palace, not doing anything. So he's not been at war. He's not working hard. And so what he has is he's gotten lazy. And you got to fight against the lie of laziness as a man. Because men, you'll feel like, man, I just deserve some laziness. Because David fought the Ammonites. He like destroyed them all. He went out to battle and he's like, okay, I'm done. For one of two reasons, he's probably like, I just need some me time. I need to put my feet up, relax a little bit. I've done enough war today. Or there was something that said, you know what? I'm just feeling overwhelmed with all the battles that I'm in. So I'm just going to kind of, they can handle it. I'm going to sit back here. I just need some time to recover. And you're like, I've done my part, right? Like David's like, I've done my part. I need a break. I'm done, right? Wrong. Men are made to be tired a lot. Write that down. That's worth writing down. Get a tattoo of that. As a man, just be tired. Just plan for it. Because when you're not tired, you'll do stupid stuff. First thing, you'll fall into laziness. And men, when they're lazy, they start to lack purpose. They start to lack direction. They start to lack a sense of call on their life. They start to lack an initiative to get into relationships. And the lie of laziness is this, that I deserve some free time. I put in enough work. I'm too tired. A little me time doesn't hurt anybody. Once I have some me time, then I'll be ready and refreshed and ready to go after I've binged watch whatever I binge watch, right? Then I'll be ready. It's not like I'm doing anything wrong. It's just some time. And I think men, a lot of times what happens is they feel overwhelmed in life. Maybe you feel that. You're like, I just feel overwhelmed. There's so much. I'm trying to, like, I feel inadequate. I feel overwhelmed. I feel like I got the weight of the world on my shoulders. And so what we do is we just stop caring. We shut down. As a man, it's easy to shut down or shut it off. And I would say you got to fight against it. You got to fight against that fight. That's a fight worth fighting every single time. 33%, just so you know, I don't know if these are helpful, but 33% of 18 to 29-year-olds are in a category called NEET, N-E-E-T, NEET. Not working full-time, not in education full-time, not in a trade full-time. What are they doing? I don't know. Average 87% of a 20-year-old male goes to bed between 10:30 and 2 a.m. Where do you find yourself? 9 hours of sleep, or 9 hours, 8 to 9 hours is what they recommend of sleep. Most men spend 9 hours on their screens is the average. 6 hours on their phone a day. The rest, I don't know, binge watching. 9 hours on their phone. You're getting more time on a screen than you are getting sleep. 20 hours a week playing video games, 8 to 10 hours a day just sitting around. Men need to work. If they don't, they get lazy. And if you're lazy, you'll get entangled with trivial things that don't matter. You are not, as a man, you are not. Like, it's not peacetime. Like, it's not, it's war. You're in a war. You've forgotten. Like, this is a real war. But they do stupid stuff from there. From the roof, David, he saw a woman bathing. The woman was very beautiful, and David sent someone to go find out about her. That man said, she is Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite. And David sent messengers to get her, and she came to him, and he slept with her. This is the one you just expect for men. As a man, you were expecting me to get here, and I really want to be helpful to you. But you got to fight against the lie of lust. It's estimated that 82% of mainstream TV contains sexual content. 82%. Most TV you're watching or anything, social media, I think it's like 200%. I'm just kidding. I don't know. But it's probably close. 87% of men view porn more than once a week. And if I can just say this, I read that not to like put you to shame, because I can see it in some of your guys' eyes. You're like, great, we're going to do this talk in front of the ladies too. Great, thanks, man. And I know this, that this is not just a man's struggle, right? There's gals in the space. It's a real struggle. So what do we do? I think there's so much shame and guilt around it among men's hearts that they don't know what to do with it. The lie of lust, it sounds something like this. I deserve this. I need this. I'm not hurting anyone anyway. Every guy does it. It's not a big deal. Helps me to relax or whatever it is. I want you to know that lust will steal your life. It will rob your soul, and it will destroy you as a man. It will turn you into a madman, or worse, it will turn you into an animal who just does whatever his desires do. And you know that. As a guy, you know that. Like, I'm not sharing anything new. But you're sitting there asking the question that I get. You're saying, I know, Ethan, but how do I stop? Like, how does this happen? And I really don't have time to get into all this, but I just want to give you something that a guy named John Tyson gave that I thought was really good. Okay, so the common approach to how to stop against lust in your heart is usually this, that it's the repression approach. That if I just have some moral standards plus some willpower, then I'll equal holiness. If I just say, you know what, porn's bad, never going to watch it again, just grit it out, white knuckle it, never going to do it, right? Then what happens is I'll acquire holiness. And this is how most people in the church tell you how to do it, right? And you're like, don't you know that's wrong? You got to have more strength. You got to have more willpower. And I don't know about you, but that's not very helpful to me, because usually what happens is it looks more like this. It's moral standards plus willpower equals guilt and shame and failure. It sets me up for that. That I just feel like, what am I going to do? Right? And so then what many men do is they're like, forget church. You just throw that off. It's no big deal. So they go to a different approach. They do the indulge approach, which is desire plus consent equals freedom. Right? So if I just do whatever I desire, and as long as I'm not hurting anybody and they're fine with it, right? Right? They know what they're doing. Like they got into that industry or whatever. Like it's not a big deal. Then I'll be free, right? Like I'll just kind of enjoy my thing and it'll be mine. And usually what happens is this, you know this, that desire plus consent equals disillusionment. You start to turn into a madman. You get deformed. You're not a man. You're like this hollow shell of a man. And usually you're enslaved to it. You can't, you're like all of a sudden the thing that was curious, all of a sudden now has my heart and I can't get out of this. It's like I'm stuck. So the only thing I know is the Jesus way. It's the Jesus way. It's love plus grace plus truth equals transformation and freedom. That Jesus would look at people and he wasn't afraid to tell them the truth. He wasn't afraid to go, you're going down a path that's going to be pretty hard to get out of. That you're going down a path that's going to deform your soul. And you're not going to recognize yourself at the end of this. And yet I love you. God forgave you at the cross. And he forgives you now. Like he knew what he bought at the cross. He knew you at your worst. And when you start to sit on the love of God and it starts to take a hold of your heart, all of a sudden it starts to change things in you. And it starts to transform you. It's not overnight. It's not just done in a moment. But it's this realness that you need. If you can get brothers around you and get honest confession where you're like, we got to be honest about this. We got to be true about this. And then you practice honest confession and huge cutting out. Like, figure out things to cut out of your life that you need to cut out. Like, if it's your phone, man, like, get a flip phone. I don't know. If you can't do that, come talk to me. I'll show you how to lock down your phone in a pretty intense way. And you'll be like, I feel like a child. Yeah, but you'll have your soul back. You'll have your soul back. If it's your laptop, figure it out. TV, get it out of your room. Get it out of your place. Like, get some whatever it is. And just keep coming back to the love of God. And going, God, I desperately need you on my knees. You need a power outside of you to work inside of you. 2 Samuel I got to show you the last one and then we're done. A messenger said to David, the men overpowered us, came out against us in the open door, but we drove them back to the entrance of the city gate. Then the archers shot arrows at your servants from the wall, and some of the king's men died. Moreover, your servant Uriah, who's Uriah? He's Bathsheba's husband, the Hittite, is dead. They got a message back from the war when David's sitting in his palace and he's sitting there hearing all of this. Watch his response. It's fascinating to me. David told the messenger, say this to Joab, don't let this upset you. Did you hear what? We just lost a bunch of men. Uriah is dead. He probably goes through a list of names. And David's like, don't let it upset you. Watch what he says. The sword devours one as well as another. Like everybody's going to die at some point. Press the attack against the city. Destroy it. I'm not going to join you, but good luck out there. Say this to encourage Joab. I don't think that would be very encouraging. As a guy hearing it, I'm like, I'm out here fighting your war. And what happened is David, in this moment, I'm like, I think he's lost his soul a little bit. I think he's lost his heart for people. He doesn't have it anymore. He doesn't care about the lost. He doesn't care about the evil in this world. And mad men, when they're mad, they start to protect themselves and they'll sacrifice others on the battlefield. And so you got to fight against the lie of losing your heart. Men today live with empty hearts and heads hung low. They live with a sense of imposter syndrome, knowing that things that they've done, they're ashamed of, and they're hoping nobody else finds out about them, and they're crippled by unhealth, secrets, and anxiety. And so they begin to lose heart. They begin to ask the question, why bother anymore? Nothing I do matters. Nothing I do is ever enough. It's not worth keep going. It's too hard. It's not worth the fight. I'll always seem to lose. I'll never win. So what is the point? And when you go down that road, men will sink into a pit of despair. They'll stop showing up. They'll stop stepping up. They'll stop speaking up. And they'll just tend to give up. And guys, I want better for you. I want so much better for you. You're in your 20s. You don't have time to like play around in your 20s. All right. like I know that's what our world sells you on. It's time to step up and become a man. And often, you know what I find is often this, that it takes the sin in this world. So like me to believe the lies. And once I believe the lie that, you know what, loneliness is a better option. Laziness is a better option. Lust is a better option. Losing heart's a better option. Once I believe all those lies, what it does is it makes me realize, oh my gosh, how good is our God? Like, how gracious is our God? That sin, what it does is it reveals, yes, how rough we are, but it reveals just how amazing he is, doesn't it? That it reveals just how good he is. And Jesus says this, in this world, you're going to have trouble. You're going to believe lies. But what's he say? Men, can we flip to the next passage here? Nope. Do we not have it? Oh my gosh, that's all right. It says, take heart. Men, I want you to just say that with me. Take heart. Okay, ready? 1, 2, 3. Take heart. Come on, say it with something like you mean it. Okay, ready? 1, 2, 3. Take heart. Take heart. I've overcome the world. Guys, you need to take your heart back. You need to take your heart back. You've given it away to the worries of this life. You've given it away to despair, to lust, to loneliness, to isolation, to sluggishness, and you need to take your heart back. 1 Corinthians 16:3, be watchful and stand firm in the faith and act like men. Be strong. Team's going to come up. We're going to close in a song, but I just want you to see this last thing in the passage. Be watchful. Be watchful. It's this concept of a watchman on the wall, that in the palace guard in the Old Testament, what they would have is they would have this city and a man would stand watch and they'd be on guard and they'd be looking in case an enemy were to try and come. They would be the ones that would warn the rest of the city, get the army ready, get your arms ready to go. We are going into battle. And as a man, you are called to stand on the lines, the wall, and be a watchman on the wall. You're in a spiritual war. You're not in peacetime. It's a war in this world, and it's for people's souls. And guys, I want men. I'm going to talk to the ladies next week. But I really want men to be the ones in the church to go, you know what? It's time we start being men. It's time we start standing on the wall. It's time we start seeing the spiritual war that we're in. Because often, you know what it is? It's men that typically are the ones to leave. They're like, you know what? The spiritual stuff, we'll let the ladies handle that. I'm going to go get a job. But I honestly believe that men are called to stand on the wall. Don't leave your post. In the church, in this world, and in your heart, stand firm. Act like men. Jesus wants to give you back your heart tonight. But you know what? As a man, the only way Jesus will give you back your heart is if you offer your heart to him. You got to offer the honesty of your heart. I said this last week. We kind of had a moment up here that was pretty powerful. Just asked the guys if they would come up and kneel, because we said in order to stand up and be a man, you got to first kneel down before the Son of Man, Jesus Christ himself, that you're willing to take a knee and go, you know what? He's going to be the one I follow. He's going to be the one I lean into. Tonight, what I want to do is I don't want to have you kneel tonight. I actually want to have you stand up as a man. I'd love to pray over you. So if I could do this, I know maybe you've never done this before, but if you're a man in here, if you're a man, I just want you to stand up right now. And I want to take a minute and just pray over you guys. I want to pray a blessing over you to just somehow encourage you. Lord, I just see all these guys, and my heart just breaks for what the lies our world sells us, for what the lies that Satan will tell us, and for the lies that we believe. So God, I pray for these guys. I pray for these men, that you would call us up higher, that we would raise the bar, that we wouldn't lower it somehow, but we would somehow raise the bar and yet realize we need grace so much, that we need forgiveness so much, that we need you, Lord Jesus, so much. You told us that we'd have trouble in this world. We feel it. But God, you said we didn't have to lose our heart in the process of it. So we're asking that you would somehow transform our hearts in the process tonight. I pray that in our time tonight, as we get the chance to circle around some guys, if we get the chance to circle around some girls, that we just have honest conversations with each other, somehow help each other, that we could be brothers around each other. God, we don't fight this fight alone. We're so grateful that you've given us your spirit. We're so grateful you've given us your church. We're so grateful you've given us each other. So God, I pray that these men stand up and act like men. I pray this in Jesus' name.